Welcome back, everybody. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams through tomorrow. It's been so much fun to be here with all of you and delighted to be taking your questions and calls on the air. It's so great to hear everybody from Chicago weigh in, even on things that are a little bit tough. You can find me online. Feel free to link in or join me on Twitter. BestMoneyMoves.com is my financial wellness technology company, and you can find a lot of information there on what companies are doing. So if you're an employer and wondering what help you can give people in the financial wellness space or ways to reduce their financial stress, you can probably find some good ideas. We look at trends and other kinds of issues at bestmoneymoves.com. And if you are looking for personal financial help, feel free to go to thinklink.com, my website, and sign up for our free weekly newsletter. All kinds of interesting news and topic relating to personal finance and money.
I love the newsletter every Monday morning.
Oh, Steve, you're so sweet to say that. Thank you.
I need to correct something. I was mistaken earlier about the PPP. There's not a maximum on the payroll. So there was a 75% minimum that you had to spend on it.
Mm-hmm.
The new bill lessened that to 60%. So you have to spend at least 60% on payroll. But you can spend 100% of it on payroll if you want.
Right, but it does not require you to recall the exact same people, does it?
That I'm not aware of. But
yeah.
I was under the understanding that, for example, in my case, it's all payroll.
Right.
So I thought I could only use 75% of the loan, but it turns out I can't. I can use the entire part to cover payroll.
Yeah, the whole concept was just to keep people employed, which is good. Well, thank you for clarifying, and we're happy to have you jump in anytime. We're going to take your calls a little bit later in the show about money, because today is Wednesday. And so when we come back from the break, we have Terry Savage, nationally syndicated financial columnist. Her column runs in the Chicago Tribune. Love talking to Terry because there are always so many interesting things to talk about. Today, we're going to talk about her column on Monday, which was about long-term care insurance and why people need it. So we will talk a little bit about that. And I'm sure we'll talk about the stock market, which is kind of holding steady today. It's been a little up, a little down. I think any day where you don't have these massive 1,000-point or 500-point movements is, you know, kind of just the market taking a deep breath and, I don't know, maybe having what Bob Surratt in the morning calls the moment of zen of the market. I don't know. I was listening to him play that like little sing-songy music, you know, the kind you get in spas. And I was thinking, oh, yes, that's the way I want to start my day. Wouldn't we all just like to start our days that way? But we will be taking your call, 312-981-7200. On topics relating to money and real estate and the stock market and long-term care insurance. I'm sure that Terry has some good thoughts about that. So stay tuned for that and more on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right. Well, it is time to talk Terry. Hey, Terry. Welcome to WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch.
Today, Elise.
Oh, it's nice to have you here as well. So long-term care insurance. Let's talk about that for a second because, you know, it's interesting. Before we hit the pandemic, right, and COVID and everything else, I was wondering if long-term care insurance would actually make it as a going concern. But
it's a new thing now, Elise. It's a new way of doing it. I was one of the early advocates of long-term care insurance, and where you put in an annual premium, and the idea was to buy it when you were in your 50s because you were younger and healthier and had a lower premium. And the presumption, although not the law, was that it would stay the same. But they couldn't raise it just because you became ill, your premium on your policy. But because the insurers went through a tough period, they used the wrong actuarial tables. They used the life insurance tables. People give up life insurance policies. They never give up their long-term care insurance policies. And they knew people would die eventually, so they'd have the money for a long time. But what they didn't realize is that people would actually use their long-term care insurance for a greater number of years than they predicted, because it's not a nursing home anymore. It's assisted living. It's a nice, maybe a good place to be.
Yeah.
And so their numbers were all out of whack. And about 10 years ago, they started raising premiums and everyone said, this is insane. I'm not going to buy this. Too expensive. And so a few years back, along came a different kind of long-term care insurance. It's combined with a life insurance policy. You put cash in, either in the form of one big single hunk of money that you might get maybe from your retirement plan, and or over a period of 10 years, but a fixed amount. And it buys you a huge pool of long-term care insurance, really leverages your money. And even better, unlike those older policies where if you don't use the money, you die without using long-term care, then the premiums are wasted. In these policies, your heirs get a death benefit because of the life insurance component, so it's never totally wasted.
What is the percentage of the death benefit that you get? Do you know?
Oh, you get at least what you put in the deposit, and then that's leveraged up somewhat. So you get more than you put in for your deposit, even if you die 6 weeks or 6 months anyway after taking out the policy. So let me make this point. Long-term care insurance is a great idea, I always said, because if you run out of money, you're going to be put in a state-funded Medicaid nursing home. Medicare only pays for skilled nursing care a limited number of days, and only after you've been in a hospital, not just under observation, but admitted for 3 days. So you can't count on Medicare for long-term custodial care. It's expensive to have someone come in and stay with you even for hours a day to help you bathe and shower, and that triggers a long-term care insurance policy, the inability to do some basic activities. So I've always been a proponent of long-term care and felt terrible when the insurance companies unexpectedly, but understandably in hindsight, they had low interest rates, they had more usage, started raising the annual premiums. And I've been delighted with this new kind of policy, but I don't think anything has made the case for long-term care insurance better, sadly, than this last few months. Because as of June 3rd, 42% of all the COVID-19 deaths in the United States have come from nursing homes or assisted living facilities. 42%.
It's shocking.
It's not because people were older. It's because they were crowded into these facilities. And why are they there? Because Medicaid pays for care primarily in facilities like this.
Right. Well,
that's not where you want to be.
No. But in nursing home situations, sadly, you've got people going from patient to patient, and maybe they don't wash their hands, or maybe they do, but their clothes touch them, and we don't even know all the ways that you can contract COVID. So that was sadly easily spread, and you're right, that number is devastating.
Too. Yeah, but the point is, I'm now talking to all of you. I'm at this stage now where one of the more peaceful things in life is that I have two long-term care insurance policies, one of the old kind where the premiums are fully they've gone up dramatically. My policy 20-some years ago when I bought it was like $1,800 a year. It's now $7,600 a year. I'm so mad, but it's got lifetime benefits and inflation protection, and they're not going to kick me out of that. The other one is fully paid up, though. I did a 10-pay policy years ago. So now you have this chance. And even so, if I don't use it, if I fall off my horse riding tomorrow, it will be, in fact, I will never use the long-term care insurance. But with this new kind of policy, there's a death benefit. So your heirs get the money. And that's what's really important.
So who's offering this new sort of combined long-term care?
This gets complicated. I want to take up your whole show. So I wrote a column. It's posted at terrysavage.com. You see it in the Tribune. It's syndicated around the country with all the details. But I give you an example. And don't get scared by these big numbers, but let's say we take a single deposit of $100,000. It will generate over $300,000, $4,000 a month for 6 years of care for a 60-year-old woman today. But we add an inflation rider, and you're getting almost $670,000 worth of long-term care benefits. And then the heirs, if you die without using it, get $110,000. So a couple of big companies are doing this. Securian, which is a division of Minnesota Life, offers one of the best policies. And the reason I wrote this column today, I know I sound like a pitch, but I give you three phone numbers at the bottom of my column. The prices are going up because of all this COVID thing, because of the continuation, the promise of low interest rates. On July 15th, the prices for these policies are going up. And whether you're putting in $10,000 a year for 10 years or $100,000, you'll have to deposit a bigger amount, like $114,000 or $15,000, to get the same coverage, or $12,000 or $13,000 a year instead of $10,000. So please, I put in three toll-free numbers of people I trust to explain and help you buy long-term care insurance. I don't sell it. They have the best. There are a couple of companies. I think the examples I use from Securian, Minnesota Life, probably the best, and they're the ones that in 2 weeks are raising their premiums. So if you were thinking about it, stop thinking about it and find out if it's right for you.
So Terry, I have a couple of questions. So the first question is, just to be really clear, you say that you get this death benefit, but is it only if you don't use the long-term care policy?
Yeah.
And if you use the long-term care policy, but only, let's say, 2 months worth, does that mean that you don't get anything? How does that part work?
The death benefit is reduced by the amount of care you've used. Okay, so presumably, I mean, what you really want, at least you're a woman. We live longer than men. If there's a man in your life, you probably not only have spent all the money on his care, but also your energy. Women wind up living longer and alone, and the most dreaded fear, and now we see why, is running out of money and being in a Medicaid-funded nursing home. It's a fear I have. I'm not. This is a bag lady or a nursing home lady kind of a fear. So I think it's really important that you look into getting at least a little bit of long-term care insurance, because people don't use. I mean, unless you have dementia or Alzheimer's, you know, this is not a condition that's probably going to last more than a couple of years. So you want a policy that allows you to remain at home. This policy I'm quoting in this article allows you once you're approved for the benefits, because you can't do these activities of living, you don't have to pay a certified nurse's assistant. You can pay your granddaughter or your niece to come and live with you. It's a cash policy, so you get that money about $4,000 a month. It gives you flexibility. If you want someone to come in for 2 or 3 hours a day, fine. And then you want to use the rest to pay your rent or food? Fine.
Right. So that's a really good thing to know. And then I just want to make clear for everybody listening, I know this is the case because I know you to be a very honorable financial journalist. You do not receive any recommendation money or kickbacks or anything
not.
From this. I just want to be really clear.
I wrote that in my syndicated column. I gave you three toll-free numbers of David Phillips, of Brian Gordon, and Phyllis Shelton, three people I have known for, at a minimum, each one of them for 20 plus years, because I was a pioneer in thinking about long-term care insurance, and they each run businesses that are primarily about getting people long-term care insurance policies that are appropriate for them. So, yeah, now you can use my name or not, but I get absolutely nothing out of it.
All right. Well, that's great to know, because we know the people always are concerned when they hear such a strong recommendation on air
from people that trust, they want to make sure that
clearly that we know that you have this handy. So, you know, just in a couple of minutes that we have left, tell us what's going on, do you think, in the stock market? Because to me, this has just been such a crazy week.
Before we leave that topic, I made a note. I want to tell everybody something. This is on the subject of the stimulus payments and people in nursing homes. Just 2 days ago, the IRS came out with a statement. Many people wrote me and said, my mother, grandmother, whatever, is in a nursing facility. She's on Medicaid, and they always take her Social Security and give her a small allowance for things. We buy her hair products and nightgowns and stuff like that. The IRS issued a proclamation that the stimulus money belongs to the nursing home recipient and not to the nursing home if in the case of a Medicaid patient. So if your mother or grandmother's in there and she got the check, they cannot confiscate it unless it moves her above the assets allowed for being in a Medicaid-funded nursing home. But they cannot automatically confiscate a stimulus check if someone's in a nursing home and they're using their Social Security to pay for it. They can't take the stimulus money away.
Right. So there's a lot there as well. You know, I want to take a quick call from Jeff, who is asking about a second stimulus. This morning, they announced that there may be a second round of stimulus payments. Jeff, what's your question about that? Jeff, why aren't we hearing Jeff? Maybe Jeff went away. All right. Well, in any case,
people are asking about
People are asking about stimulus, and this morning
there's a giant debate in Congress.
Yeah.
This is an election year. Both parties want to buy the votes. That's but there's a great debate about whether the stimulus is a good idea or a bad idea and who should get it. Should we pay people not to work? Should we give them a bonus for going back to work? Should we put money? We haven't finished, let me make it very clear, putting money in the hands of people who deserve it. And many Social Security recipients are still waiting to get their stimulus check. It should come this month. But there are people still who have not received theirs. So it's going to be a big political debate, and you won't know that it's over until it's over. But the bias, even though the Fed chairman is really in favor of doing whatever he can to help the economy, and all the politicians are, the answer is going to be, how are they going to work it out, both Republicans and Democrats, to get this money out there? They want it out there in time for the election. You can be sure about that.
Yeah, I bet they do. Terry Savage, a nationally syndicated financial columnist. Her column runs in the Chicago Tribune. You can go to terrysavage.com and read it. Thanks for being with us so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Elise.
Welcome back to WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for John Williams today. I'll be back tomorrow. He's back on Friday, so you'll get John back. It was never long-term anyway. 312-981-7200. We are taking your questions right now about unemployment, the stock market, money, real estate, mortgage interest rates, and all the other interesting things that we have talked about over the last few hours on the show today. Rich joins me on the line now. Hey, Rich, welcome to WGN Radio. Welcome.
All right. Question on PUA.
Okay.
I've applied for the regular unemployment. I'm a self-employed contractor, so I get 1099s. I don't get any W-2s at all.
Right.
So I applied for the unemployment. I got my return back with a credit card, and of course they denied me because there's no money that's gone into the account.
That's unfortunate.
And yes. So I've gone back into IDES and applied for the PUA. It asks you all the common questions. Did you already apply, et cetera? And I've done that. And the first question that comes up, there's a little row of six questions. First question that comes up is, are you employed? And well, I am still employed, but I do not make what I used to make, and that's the whole point of PUA, correct?
Right, that supposedly.
I don't want to lie, so I say, yes, I am employed, and immediately it kicks out, well, you cannot apply for the PUA.
Right, so what you may, so I'm going to just...
I try to do it the other way, where, no, I'm not employed, and then I go through a bunch of steps, and then it still kicks me out. You cannot apply.
Huh. I wonder.
So how do I get around all this?
I'm going to just pod you down here because there's a lot of road noise with you driving, and I want to make sure that you can hear the answer.
I'm going to pull over. I'm going to pull over. Hang on.
Pulling over is a good thing. So while you're doing that, the Office of Unemployment Compensation is online, and they have a missed weeks claim solution for PUA, right? So this is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance is PUA. And they have a phased approach by your Social Security number. And so what they're doing for people to resolve the outstanding issues, and I would say, Rich, that you're one of those, right? Outstanding issues for PUA. There is a schedule over the next couple of days. So today is Wednesday, June 17th. And for Social Security numbers that end in 0, 1, 2, or 3, 0, 1, 2, or 3, you would be able to access the PUA system today in a different way than before. And tomorrow, it's for Social Security numbers ending 4, 5, and 6. And then on Friday, it's 7, 8, and 9. And then on Sunday, it starts over again with 0, 1, 2, 3. And it goes like that through next Tuesday, so over the weeks. And what it does is it allows you to claim missing weeks. So, and it walks you through how to do this. So we'll put this up on our website, Pete is going to do that at the end of the show. And this is from the Office of Unemployment Compensation. And we'll put this up because it walks you through how you're supposed to do this and what the weekly certification update is and the changes. And I'm hoping that the people like you who shouldn't be kicked out won't be kicked out going forward, or at least that they will have, a better system for you. So let's say that this doesn't work, right? And, you know, in terms of getting yourself into their system at all, it goes down and it gives you some places that you can go for some further, some places to connect to try and get some more assistance. So we will add these website, this information to the website so that you'll be able to get at least a little bit more information. And I'm hoping that this will be enough. If not, the Department of Employment Security is probably the place that you'll end up having to go and file the claim, even though this is federal. Maybe they'll be able to steer you in the right direction as well. Rich, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Fred. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show.
Afternoon.
How can I help you today?
Yes. I am furloughed. I'm a part-time worker, furloughed till the fall. I receive a military retirement.
Okay.
And I receive Social Security. Not disability, the regular Social Security.
Okay.
Can I, since I work part-time and I got furloughed till the fall, as far as applying, I know they have to certify you and say yes or no. Can I get the unemployment?
So, it's also a little bit hard to hear, so I'm gonna pod you down just a little bit. So there are two ways, according to this morning, it's this morning a report on CNBC. So there are two ways that an individual can receive unemployment benefits by working through either a work sharing program or a partial unemployment insurance benefit. So if you've been furloughed, but you're still receiving some money, is that what you're saying?
Well, no, not from my employer.
Okay.
I receive a military retirement, and I receive Social Security.
All right.
But I also work for a civilian employer, and I've been furloughed till the fall.
All right. So according to the Social Security website, and this, I'm not sure if this would work for military retirement benefits. I think it does, though. Just because you get Social Security shouldn't mean, or retirement benefits should not mean that you're excluded from this. If you've been furloughed, you should be able
right.
to get unemployment. Have you applied for unemployment?
No.
So you should.
I'm going to just to see if I get it. But I thought maybe you might know that based on the information I gave you.
I don't know for sure, but I will say that I think it's worth applying. I do also think there are a lot of people like Rich who just called in who are supposed to be getting this, but they're not getting it. And, you know, the PUA, I think the rules are complicated, and I think that maybe the technology doesn't quite work the way it's supposed to. I know some people who've gotten kicked out because they clicked on the wrong box accidentally, or it didn't make sense to them the way it was being asked in their own personal situation. So, Fred, I would absolutely apply and see what happens because I think that it's always worth applying. And then if you're having problems, you know, always escalate, because that's the next big thing to do to be able to see where you're going and what benefits you're owed.
What if you're a full-time worker, but you also have a gig job, like an Uber driver or something? You've still got your full-time job. Can you apply for benefits because you can't do your, Uber's not a good example because you could still be doing that, but a job you've been furloughed for is a 1099?
I think you're able to, Steve. This is where, if you were earning more, so for example, so you have your 40-hour week job. They don't know that it's 40 hours a week, or it might be part-time, 30 hours a week. But my understanding is that if you've lost a job, you should be able to file for unemployment. But this job sharing thing is sort of interesting, right? For the extra $600 a week, what they're doing is they might reduce the amount of unemployment you get because it's a part-time job. You wouldn't get the full amount. You might get the part-time. I don't know. I think it's complicated.
We're learning that
every single minute of the day for all of this stuff because it always changes. All right. It is 12:42. We're going to do the Wintrust Business Minute. And here's Steve Bertram with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Juneteenth, also known as Emancipation Day, is becoming a paid holiday for thousands in Chicago. Grubhub and Lyft are giving office workers the day off, though drivers will still be on the roads. Crane says Fifth Third Bank will close all branch offices at 2 o'clock. The Brookings Institution is sounding the alarm over the expected decline for Midwestern regional public universities, saying their condition is likely to get worse when it comes to economics after the pandemic. Crane says 9 of the schools are in Illinois, including Chicago State and Northeastern University. Illinois State and Northern are on the list as well. And McDonald's has chopped 25 seconds off the U.S. drive-through time during the pandemic. That's a big deal in the fast food world. McDonald's trimmed its menu to speed things up, and many franchisees would like to see those cuts be made permanent. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
And to you, Orion, for agribusiness.
All right. We'll take a look at a continuing argument between the big oil industry and the nation's corn growers. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has not yet taken action on a petition by refiners seeking retroactive biofuel blending waivers. That word from Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, who made that statement in a weekly call with reporters yesterday. Senator Grassley said the petitions were an attempt to skirt a Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals decision earlier this year that said waivers from the nation's biofuel blending laws granted to small refineries after 2010 had to take the form of an extension. The decision, if applied broadly, would likely put an end to the administration's practice of granting large numbers of exemptions to blending mandates. However, a Department of Energy official said last month the department would review retroactive blending waivers. If granted, such waivers could be considered compliant with the court's ruling. His comments sparked outrage from biofuel advocates, including corn growers, who claim waivers undermine demand for ethanol and other biofuels. And, of course, you know who does not agree with that stance. The oil industry says that claim just isn't true. We have had a lot of postponements and cancellations because of the pandemic. But during June Dairy Month, when in Wisconsin, about 60 June Dairy Month breakfasts on the farm were being served each year, where anybody could visit a dairy farm and watch the cows being milked and watch milk being produced. Well, that's been a challenge this year because of the pandemic. But Pepin County, Wisconsin, that's about midway between Minneapolis, St. Paul, and La Crosse, Wisconsin, along the Mississippi River. Their 32nd town and country breakfast scheduled for this year is going to be a drive-by breakfast. Due to the current situation everyone faces right now, they're offering a drive-by dairy breakfast this year, and you can come out to one of the two farms near Eau Claire to get your breakfast bag and kid fun bags, take home and prepare your food, and enjoy a dairy-filled breakfast with your family. A drive-in June Dairy Month breakfast in Pepin County. And again, to respond to the many emails I've received, the middle of July is when the Sandwich Fair will make its decision on whether or not to take place this year in early September, so we'll have to continue waiting for that one. Meanwhile, state fairs that have been canceled or postponed until next year include Illinois, both the fairs, the DuCoin Fair and the State Fair at Springfield. as well as the Iowa State Fair, the Indiana State Fair, and we'll let you know about others as soon as we know. So enjoy dairy products during June Dairy Month, and that's your money on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for John Williams. We'll be back tomorrow for him as well, starting at 9 a.m. It's 12:50. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, Herb, I hear you have a life insurance question for me.
It's a question about life insurance. I don't know if you could help me. It's my grandkids.
Yeah? What do they want to do? Are they trying to kick you into the grave already?
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
Maybe they got me in there already. I bought it when they were young. And periodically, the insurance company would send me letters, would you like to increase it? A small amount only, like a $275 or $250 increase in premiums. So I did it once, but I never got the sheet that I got with the original policy. I don't know if you call that the actuary sheet that tells you how much you paid into it and how much you have as cash value.
I think that's what it's called.
Well, I never got it. In the last week, I got another request if I'd like to increase it again. But I don't know where my cash entry is and how much cash value I got, because I never got the sheet when I sent in a increased premium. So what do I ask them, or do I need to get one of those sheets?
So what you'd want to do is you'd want to ask for a history of the account, basically an accounting of the account. So you want to see every payment that you've made, and you need to be able to track back. I'm sure you probably have some records, or your bank does, of when you started paying a little bit more. And you want to be able to track to make sure that when you started making those extra payments that you actually were getting the increased benefit that you thought you were getting. So I'm taking it that you bought this cash value insurance policy on your grandkids. It's not that they bought it on you, or you bought it for yourself,
Right, I bought it for them at a young age, which I thought would be cheaper, you know, for them to just something in the future, you know, to fall back on if they needed, you know, something. So that's why I increased it. But like I said, I'm getting another letter now where I'd like to increase it more, but I have no sheets like the original policy that tells me how much I put in and how much cash value I have in the policy.
Yeah, I have to tell you, this is not my favorite way to help your grandchildren save for retirement. I would have much preferred you making those deposits right into a 529 college savings plan, or even buying savings bonds, or even just contributing to a brokerage account that was invested in the S&P 500. Because when you have these kinds of whole life policies, which is what that is, and this is just for everybody else, and I'll get to what you should do next, but, you know, whole life policies are basically mutual funds with an insurance wrapper. Right. And so you end up double paying. You pay for the mutual fund an expensive amount. You pay for the insurance as an expensive amount. And so you end up paying more than you should for less of a quality investment than you should. So live and learn, so you can decide whether or not you want to increase this going forward or you want to make a different decision. But what you should do now is call the insurance company and ask them to give you an accounting of every single payment you've made and the amount of cash value that's built up in this account or these accounts. And you want to see it in writing before you agree to do anything.
Okay, to follow up on the next, if I want to increase it again.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I think you should really think carefully about that, because I don't know what you're paying, and I don't know, you know, what they would do about tapping into it. But just imagine that you had spent over the last however many years, 5 years, let's say, and let's say you had invested that money in an S&P account instead for them, right? How much more money would you have today than what the cash value is for that policy?
Yeah.
So just something.
Yeah, okay. Well, live and learn, I guess. Yeah.
Hey, you're not dead yet, right?
Well, I hope not. I'm driving.
Me too, and for everybody else out there. So, you know, think about whether you want to continue that or not, okay?
All right.
Thanks so much, Herb, for your call. I really appreciate it. 312-981-7200 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Kathy joins us on the line. Hi, Kathy. We don't know where Kathy is. Oh, Kathy, if you hung up, please call back. We'd really love to talk to you. All right, let's try Ruth on line one. Ruth, are you there?
I am.
Oh, terrific. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. How can we help you?
You can't. I'm trying to help you.
Okay.
Or people out there. I was one of those people that was not getting their unemployment benefits since April.
Wow.
And so somebody told me to call my state rep, which I did. And I got a call back from the Unemployment Bureau within 3 days. Everything is worked out. I got a check for $6,000 today.
Wow.
You know, it's worked out beautifully. And I've passed this information on to different folks, and they've had the same experience. So
let me just be clear. You called your state representative in Washington, right?
For Evanston. Okay.
Oh, for state. So you called the state of Illinois state representative.
I just called my state representative, wherever you live.
Yep.
And they just take all your information. You just, like, you know, give them some information. And like I said, I was called back within 3 days, and then everything was straightened out.
That's fantastic. It is so nice when you hear about somebody in government able to actually cut red tape for you. And I'm sure, Ruth, when you got that check today, you were like jumping with joy because you already had 12 places for it to go.
Yes, I did. And the state rep was Robin Gable in Evanston. And I just have a big shout out for her and her office that were just like so amazing. You know, I I'm jumping up and down.
Well, thank you, Ruth, for sharing that. And here's a big round of applause for Robin, for her and her staff for getting that done for you. And it's a great piece of advice, and I wish I had thought of it earlier to recommend to Rich when he called in. So thank you so much for calling today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. It is 312-981-7200 is our number here. Kathy, we just have a minute left. With your PPP loan, what's your question?
My question is, if an employer received the PPP loan, is he to give us 100% of what our normal pay is, or can he give us as low as 60% of what our normal pay is?
I don't believe that the employer is required to give you any specific amount, but they are required to use up to, and now Steve Bertrand and I talked about just a minute ago, 60% has to go towards the paycheck, and it has also been expanded over time. So it's entirely possible that they could give you, your employer could give you 50% of your pay for 4 months as opposed to 50% or 100% rather over 2 months. The Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, try to say that fast three times. I can't. So In the paperwork that I signed, I don't believe that there was any requirement that I actually give a specific amount to my employees. I've managed to keep them on full time, and for that I'm really grateful, but I don't believe that there is that requirement. Thank you so much for your call. I'm Elise Klink, so guess what? It's 1 o'clock. I'm out of here until 9 a.m. tomorrow, and be sure to join me here for the Wintrust Business Lunch tomorrow, and then, of course, for John Williams at 9. I'll talk to you tomorrow.